You're listening to a podcast of Ice and Fire, episode 190 for the week of February 28th, 2016. Welcome back, everyone, to the longest-running podcast dedicated to George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series and occasionally HBO's Game of Thrones. As usual, this is Amin.
And this is Kyle.
And we're joined by our special returning guest from Fantasy Flight Games, game producer Jason Walden. Welcome back, Jason.
How you doing, guys?
Good to have you here.
Welcome back.
Number three.
Yeah, I think you enjoy coming to the halls of House Manwoody.
Yeah, I do, actually.
So we have the usual lemon cakes and Arbor Red Dornish wine available.
What is the frequency for guests for you guys? Like, how often do people come back?
Never. No one ever comes back.
Oh, once you go Manwoody.
We have returners fairly often, I think.
Yeah. We ourselves have not been podcasting as usual, as often as we used to, just to due to life and babies, that kind of thing.
Life and babies.
Yeah. Those are separate concepts, life and babies, too.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely don't go together. It's just...
Yeah. I don't know if I told you, but Mimi is pregnant now.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah.
Is she off that she's not participating much anymore? Or?
No, she's got to get the heir to House Manwoody ready, so...
She's still going to be joining us, I feel.
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully when she starts like staying at home, then she'll be able to podcast more often, right?
Yeah, wonderful.
Podcast leave.
When was the last... how long has it been since you've been on, Jason? Oh, it's been a little bit.
128, I believe, is the last episode.
Woo!
Dang. What are we at now?
This is 190, so...
Right. There it is.
Good.
Wait, we're at 190. Wow, we're coming up on 200, huh?
Yeah, we got to get something planned there. I'll probably match the birth of Mimi's baby.
Nice.
Cool. So what we have, we've gone into quite a depth into the board game in the past few episodes we've been here. So I think I have a couple of questions since then related to the expansions that we'll kind of power through and then ask what else you've been up to at Fantasy Flight Games, like what other news you may have. So... As we talked about last time, Jason in particular designed two expansions for the board game, A Feast for Crows and A Dance with Dragons. And I think you might have A Dance with Dragons.
I do, yes. And yeah. Unfortunately, I haven't partaken in that expansion yet. But every time we play, I kind of go, oh, we should do this.
Yeah.
But it's always too late. We've always started already. So I hope to do it sometime soon.
It's basically the Dance of Dragons version is based like the timeline of Dance of Dragons. Like the Baratheons are up north, they have forces up there. It's matching that. So there is a question related to that for you, Jason. Is how would you approach playing House Baratheon in the Dance of Dragons? Because a lot of people seem to have trouble playing with them. They often get crushed by Tyrell, or it's I think it was one of the more difficult houses to play.
When you're comparing the Dance of Dragons scenario to the base game scenario. It is the positioning of House Baratheon in particular that makes it unique. A lot of the other houses don't have a lot else different going. Martell's pretty much in the same position they were. Stark, you know, everybody looks like the game is in progress, but it's not that different than what it could have been. But how often do you see Baratheon actually in the position that they're in the start of that game? So I really like the position that it does something different than any other Game of Thrones board game probably played. That being said, yes, Baratheon is a very difficult position to play, but the tricky part is whether they want to attack Stark right off the bat or not. I think a lot of players, at least that I've seen, they take the diplomatic approach and try to see if they can, you know, move down south with their forces to try to retake or resupport Storm's End and Dragonstone. I don't think that's the best option. I think it's viable. It can work, but I think I would prefer the more direct assault right on Stark's back door. And you can take Winterfell, and then you got yourself a Northern Kingdom to work with.
I think, as you described in the game itself, it's an advanced level game, so you need experience with the base game before you play it, and especially diplomacy, because Tyrell can, if they really want to, crush you on turn one, but if you play this variant a couple times, they should realize that's not the best move because then everyone gangs up on them.
They can't crush you. They can take one or two of your strongholds,
that's all you have, though, right?
The majority of your forces, intact forces, are not even there. So, I mean, I wouldn't say it's fair to say that they can crush you. Tyrell can't even touch the majority of your forces, to be honest. Now, if you mismanage those ones up there and they aren't able to grab the other castles and strongholds, then you're in trouble. But that might be the trap, is that the importance of Dragonstone and Storm's End, while nice, strong areas to control, it's not the end of the world if you lose them.
And then I had a question in relation to a Feast for Crows, or more, I wanted to get on the record your ruling for Stark. How Stark has a card where, I mean, you've said this before, but I just want on the record because people don't seem to get it. Like, when it says you control five strongholds or castles and Winterfell can be one of those five, right?
Yes, those are separate clauses. And that's just a, if you look at all the other houses, it's basically the design was to come up with two clauses of victory, what two things they need to check for in victory, one of which is their home territory, their home area, and then there's a second one. So they were written independently and then put together, so it makes it look like they don't work together, but they actually, they're independent clauses, so they can be independently true. Yeah. That makes sense.
Makes sense to me. I mean, like symbolic logic, basically, like an and.
Yes.
Condition, but not everyone, I mean, people don't live by that, that's why some people were confused, but it's just good to have that there, but get that on the record. Sorry if I bore you, Kyle, on these, but...
are you kidding me? I've got my dance expansion out right now, and I am studying where the Baratheons start, and hopefully next time I play, if I'm the Baratheons, the people playing Starks did not hear this, and will know that I will swiftly attack them.
Well, here's the thing. Like, if I'm playing Stark, you shouldn't attack Stark. Maybe the average person.
There you go. Oh, yeah, that Baratheon. You've kind of got your two guys down there. And then, oof, yeah. That's a rough start.
Yeah.
The more advanced discussion on it is that the Tyrell can take out those southern strongholds of yours if you're Baratheon. But to do so would require a commitment that he might not be ready to make, because if he does, then other factions are going to take up the rest of his stuff. For example, his western borders, particularly his home area of Highgarden, is under incredible threat from Greyjoy if Greyjoy chose to attack it.
Mm.
So if he doesn't move his forces back home, he's going to be in trouble from Greyjoy. So if you're the Baratheon player, you tell Greyjoy, hey, go hit Tyrell in Highgarden. That's a great idea. And then Greyjoy looks at it and says, well, look at that. You're right.
That's very true, because if the Baratheons are attacking the Starks up there, the Greyjoys can focus their energies down in Highgarden area. Very true.
It's actually my opinion that Greyjoy is the most powerful in that expansion. Not initially, because they don't have a lot of troops, but one, because their ships are all over the place. So they can get around very easily. Two, because they can, as I said, they can be a good ally for Stark or for Baratheon, for anyone. And three, because of the reader card, because that control over the Westeros tracks is incredibly powerful, especially if you do a mock battle or you know the outcome that's obvious, you can affect the Westeros track.
Mm. The funny thing about the reader card, actually, is that when I was originally designing it and when we were playtesting it, I don't remember what card was in its place. That card didn't exist, and everyone was saying the Greyjoy faction was too weak, and it wasn't viable. It was not a winning solution, because you were so dependent on having the right muster cards come out.
Hmm.
Because you start with nothing and you have to then gain the castle. So if those muster cards come out right away and you don't have the castles to do anything about it, then it's pretty much over for you.
Yeah, so there's only six turns too. So
yeah, the reader card was invented or made so that it fixes that problem and allows them to get those musters out exactly when they want to. So
My opinion is to use the reader at least twice a game, if not more, especially with cycling. I mean, yeah, muster for sure, but sometimes a clash, like, you know, a clash is coming, you save your tokens for that. Like, it's an incredibly powerful effect.
Interesting. I can't remember, does Greyjoy have any, they don't have any cards allowed them to cycle, though, do they?
No, but I mean, you could just fight lots of battles and cycle.
Okay, so you're saying,
effectively, the cards are pretty good.
Hmm.
Have you ever tried playing with those cards in any of the other games, Feast or base game?
I haven't. I know some people that have. Either they've replaced the cards completely, which I think it's probably the better way to go, or they've done kind of like a mix of cards between different things, which is kind of, I think, can be imbalanced.
When we play now, I just let, because we play with experience players, I let them pick of the two sets of cards, each can independently choose which set they want.
Hmm.
So we can mix and match, and it works just fine. I mean, we don't mix. They're a set, so you say I am taking this set or that set. You won't take. You
know? Yeah, that's fine.
I've seen other people that like draft them, and that gets really crazy.
Yeah.
Whoa. Like different houses from different houses, you could have a hand. Of...
No, I haven't seen that. I've heard of that. What I was talking about was more like you take your two, you combine them together, and then you kind of combo. You take the one you want, and then someone deletes one of the ones that you have. So you're going back and forth, choosing the best set, and it totally throws out the window the strength value. So you don't have to have 1-4 and 1-3. I mean, if it just so happens you grab 2-4s, well, good for you, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow, I've never even thought about that. Interesting.
It's interesting. It's imbalanced, but it's fun.
I think it was an ingenious idea, and I don't know if it was yours or not, but just having these different sets for all the books and it just going along and having the game play out where the characters are at the beginning. When I first got sent this, I looked at it and I was like, this is awesome. This is amazing. This is so cool that you can do this, and it's like you're playing along with the books.
Mm-hmm. I get so much heat, though, for the spoilers that Dance of Dragons had in it. Everyone's like, where are the Starks?
Less of them right now, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he has one of the cards in Dance of Dragons. I think he has Mance Rayder, but he's wearing rattle shirts.
Yep.
Colors. So yep. That, Jason put all these little references in there that he had to be a book reader to get.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, the show readers wouldn't get that one, would they? Or the show watchers wouldn't get that one.
No. They'd be like, Mance, who?
Yeah.
just to finish off with the Dance Dragons chat, I totally agree with you on Tyrell. They always face the decision of whether to go west or whether to try to become a replacement Baratheon. And my experience is generally, I mean, it varies per group, but generally better to go west because, especially with only 6 turns, strongholds are really important. And Greyjoy can just grab a bunch and pretty much win just on the tiebreak if they take your home territory. So going west is typically the better option, I think. Okay, so that's it for the two expansions. There was I think I've asked this question before. It's probably annoying to hear it. I guess it should be asked in terms of the board game. The whole Greyjoy Lannister situation, somebody asked, is this like a intended feature or is it a bug?
The base game stuff?
Yeah.
If you look at the first edition of Game of Thrones, I don't know if you ever played that one.
Yeah.
It was a problem there as well.
They had actually had the errata to fix part of it. It was
yeah,
still a problem.
They fixed it in one way, and I chose to fix it in a different way that wasn't as strong as I wanted it to be.
Hmm.
But there were some other mitigating factors at the time that it was being made that forced my hand into what you currently see. So,
you would have changed it a little bit more, or it would be different in the next edition.
I have, yeah. I'll just say that. That's fair. That's fair to say, yes. I wish it could have been done differently. Yeah.
It's still an amazing game, but that's something that people do mention or notice no matter what the gaming group is.
The thing, the game is so asymmetrical.
Yeah.
Even in a perfectly, you know, quote-unquote balanced situation, you're going to see a lot of swings one way or the other. It's only when you start to look at the breadth of how often Lannister wins, or how often the Lannister and Greyjoy situation plays out, that you see the imbalance. Mm-hmm. But even then, I will say that I still have not seen, and I have looked at a lot of data, I have not seen the Greyjoy player win necessarily that much more than Lannister. Because when those two go head-to-head and really start to nail on each other, Greyjoy might come out ahead of Lannister. But it is not necessarily a winning strategy for him.
Yeah, I think I actually agree with you on that. As long as Lannister is at least an equal player, then they can kind of pull him down and then prevent the win for them. Like, they won't win themselves, but mm-hmm. they'll prevent the win. So if you play with experienced players, then it becomes, okay, it's not worth it. But if you play with not experienced players or a balance of experience, then they'll just do it and then both players get knocked out of it. Or if you're better at Greyjoy, well, then you'll easily win if you're the better player.
Yeah. A bad Lannister player looks really bad when you play it out. Whereas a bad Greyjoy player, it's redeemable. Yeah. Like there's it doesn't look yeah. it doesn't look turn out as bad.
If you are clearly better as Lannister, you can even despite the problem get around, and then it's good. Then you just crush Greyjoy yep. and you win.
Yep.
But yeah, in a different situation, it might be different. And I guess this might kind of lead to more of the final questions is, one, are there any ideas for or plans for expansion that might bring the Targaryens or Essos in? And second, is there maybe a third edition in the future?
Can't speak much to that. I've always, ever since I was working on the second edition, I've had plans to what to do with the Targaryens, but it's my own personal plan. It's not the company's plan. So, as far as what we're going to do, I don't know.
Cool. But that would be more, I would think, an expansion than like edition 3, right?
Wouldn't do a new edition, I wouldn't think. But then again, I'm not necessarily going to speak for the company.
Yeah. So. Given that the game is going to be around in a long time, you can't predict, right? It could be like 5 or 10 years later, you have a third edition. There's no way to predict that. But an expansion, like, you can hopefully at least have the hope of getting, right?
I'll say one thing with our industry. I don't know how many board games you play or how into the industry as a whole you are, but you're noticing a huge trend in board gaming, and that is going towards the digital realm. Like how board gaming and digital applications are integrating. You're seeing a lot of games that you would never have thought would have had a digital component have digital components. So, like, that's something to keep an eye on, I guess, if I'm just speculating and guessing. I'm like, well, what could Game of Thrones do with a digital component? You know, is that something that would be even viable? Would it be fun? Would it be anything, you know? So that's, I don't know.
Well, I mean, people are playing it online themselves, like play-by-mail email systems and whatever. So that's already quite popular. So there's room for the company to actually move in there and do it, I would think, and I would think it'd be popular. So
yeah,
it's up to the company if they do that, but I think the demand would be there.
What games lately have been taking that sort of semi-digital route? I've been pretty involved with the board games. I'm somewhat involved in the board games in the past year or so, and I'm curious.
There's translation into board games, the digital board games. So you take a board game and you make an app of it. That's, you know, not necessarily tied into the actual physical copy, but it is the game in digital form.
Like Exploding Kittens or something.
Well, as far as digital applications for board games, there's tons and tons of them. Everything from Ticket to Ride to, what else do I have on my phone right now? I got Puerto Rico, Galaxy Trucker, I think just came out with one. There's just tons. Yeah. So that's one thing. The first thing I was mentioning is that you take a board game and you make it a digital version. That's the first thing I was talking about. The second thing, and that's something that we've been looking more into, is taking a board game and playing it alongside an app. So it supports the board game. So for us, XCOM, I don't know if you guys played that at all, but we made that XCOM board game. And it's an app that guides you as you play the game. And it does things that an actual board game could never do, particularly with timers and random events and all that stuff. So.
Well, even like Hearthstone is kind of an example of that in the card game arena. Like people, like games like Magic the Gathering, etc. Now you have Hearthstone. It's a simpler version, but it can do things that the paper game can't with random effects. Yeah.
But that's a full game on its own.
But inspired by card games.
Inspired, but not.
And then also goes beyond you can't play Hearthstone in paper. Like they've made paper versions of it, but it's so complicated. You can't do the things that can be done on a computer.
Yep.
Yeah. So kind of related to this, I mean, is if you're adapting the games, especially Feast for Crows, I would think would be the best online because it's a fast-paced game compared to the board game. I mean, people do play the board game online, but I kind of wish Feast for Crows was more widely played as a tournament-type game because I enjoy it. I think it's a good system for that.
Yeah. Have you ever played on the Vassal system?
No, but I definitely have heard of it. Isn't that used also? Yeah, that's pretty popular, right?
It's not really fancy or anything, but it basically just puts the board game on your computer as far as like you have to physically move the components around on the computer, but it puts it there so you can interact with it. And I think there's something there as far as, you know, making a game inside of Vassal, just like more of a fan thing. Like if fans ever wanted to expand, for example, Feast for Crows for Game of Thrones, looking into Vassal for doing that would be something I think would be interesting.
We have our own, like, we've kind of stopped playing for a while just because life has been busy, but we were playing Feast for Crows just, like, by distance over time, and it's a good game for that. Like, it's It's fun to play. We kind of we had our own little league, Manwoody League, going for a while. So that's
how were you doing that? Were you doing that by email?
Well, we have our own like private system. It's not online, like because it's kind of a questionable league. Like you wouldn't. It's not something you just would put online on a website because it's getting questionable things. But if it's a private system that no one can use unless you're within that system, then we like this. We've made our own system for playing. Like you kind of there's not like a rule. It's not like there's two ways of doing this. As Jason said, there's a way of like you actually kind of physically move the pieces yourself. Just imagine your hand extending into the computer and moving the piece. That's what it is. So you could actually do illegal moves if you want. There's no like rule system within the system to tell you, oh, you can't have like seven knights sitting here. It's up to you. But if you actually programmed the game, you could have a game with a built-in rule system that would stop that.
There we go.
Yeah.
For a second, I pictured you all had the board game set up and you all had the pieces and you would email, you know.
Well, actually, the first time I
pawn from A2 to B3. Okay. And everybody moves it. And
some people do that.
Well, you've never played diplomacy? That's all you'd play with diplomacy.
No, when I first played the via this system, I would actually have the board game on my table and just for like planning, do stuff. But then I got complaints from roommates that I had the board game sitting there for months on the table, right? So,
and I, you know, I'm just picturing playing Twilight Imperium like that, and how it already takes a day or weekend to play, and how it could stretch it out to one game per year. You know,
yeah, like the Game of Thrones ones would take about 3 months, and if it lagged, it takes forever. Like people go on vacation and stuff, it could take 6 months for a game. You only do a move a day, so it's not a huge commitment. It's,
okay, there we go.
It's actually, I think, just to finish on this point, it actually perhaps is the most advanced level of playing the game is playing like that, because when you play a move a day, you can have the best diplomacy. You can email each other. You can plan things to a completely different level than playing face-to-face.
It's totally... We play we don't play Game of Thrones like that. We play diplomacy, though, which is, you know, Game of Thrones is partly inspired by. We played that at work, and we email, but we don't say who's who. So, you know, I'm England and I'm attacking France. I don't know who that France player is. I know he's one of the people at my work that I'm friends with, but it kind of helps save your relationship. Yeah, you kind of do a lot more shady backstabbing and stuff.
You're like, hey, that guy's having French food today. Maybe he's playing France. That's cool. That's really cool. And it's, you see that you can have far more in-depth diplomacy that way than if you have to rush it at a table. But there is still something special about playing face-to-face, and that's why I like to do it when I can. Okay, so that's it for the kind of the board game discussion, although we want to talk to you, Jason, because you want to tell us about this trivia game you've been working on.
Yeah, we did a HBO Game of Thrones trivia game, which I think is going to be really cool.
Ooh.
Is it out already, or is it coming out?
No, it's close. I don't have an exact date, but it should be out soon.
Nice. Cool. So it's with HBO, so it's the show. It's Game of Thrones.
It is purely the show. I tried to make that clear as I was writing a lot of the rules and stuff. That it's not going to trick you as far as the book readers to the show. Well, actually, it can trick you if you're not paying attention. If you're a book reader, there are some stumbling block questions that, you know, if you're not careful, you remember it's just the show, not the books.
Well, good thing.
That being said, though,
that is sick and twisted of you, sir.
I'm just saying, good thing we don't have Mimi here. But continue.
that being said, I was able to mine. What it basically comes down to is, it's not just the show; it's everything that HBO acknowledges as being source material. So it's not the book. I cannot pick up a book and reference it. That's never something I did when we were doing it. But I don't know if you guys have seen on the Blu-rays and stuff. They have those little animated vignettes.
Yes.
Yep.
Those behind the scene, or the backstory kind of things, where they describe the history of Westeros and stuff.
Okay. Yes.
That is all legit. That's all stuff I could pull off of. So, even though a lot of that stuff was not actually in the TV show, it was fair game for questions. So.
Okay. What about the HBO Go, the app where it would give you additional information if you clicked on the characters?
Yes, all that stuff is legitimate to is source material as well. Not, I didn't get a lot of use out of it because a lot of it wasn't as deep as, for example, the vignettes. But a lot of that stuff, the HBO Go stuff, was they were just literally reiterating what the show had already detailed. So it was helpful, but it wasn't any deeper than it had already done.
So yeah, you don't know when it's coming out, but it's coming out soon for
very soon.
Yeah,
it'll definitely be out before the new season or the season comes out. Cool. This game takes place covers the first four seasons, because while we were developing it, we didn't have time to do the fifth season. The fifth season was actually in process while we were doing it, so it covers seasons 1 through 4. But,
and is it what? I don't know how to ask this question. What is there, like a board involved? Is it just pure trivia, or
so it's different than most trivia games you've played before, because you have a map of Westeros with a bunch of locations on. It's kind of hard to describe without visuals, but I'm gonna try this. You have a bunch of locations in Westeros that you're trying to control. So when you are trying to answer a question, you choose one of those locations as if you're trying to insert your influence into that location. If you correctly answer the question, you can place one of your tokens there. However, the tokens come in three different sizes, and based on how difficult of a question you want to answer. So if you answer the hard, if you want to lay a big token, which is a three-pointer, you have to answer three questions correctly,
okay,
all of them, or you won't place it at all. Or you can answer one question by placing a small token, but obviously you won't gain as much capital in that location. So there's a lot of very tricky strategy on top of it. It's got more strategy than I think any trivia game I've ever played. So I'm hoping it appeals a little bit to the strategy player.
Nice. Well. Fantastic.
Yes, it's sounds nicer than just like counting up points. You know, it's a more interesting system, I think, this way.
It is. Yeah. We it's up on our website if you guys want to go read about it too. But
sure, we'll put a link up with the episode as well.
What's the title of the game?
It is just Game of Thrones, or Game of Thrones, the trivia game.
Let's see.
The trivia game. I know. I was like, to the Googles. Trivia game. Very nice. And you said it's going to be out soon.
It was an interesting experience. I've never making a trivia game is. I've made a lot of games. Been at Fantasy Flight for quite a while now, and I've done a lot of games. But making a trivia game is a whole different game.
when your boss or when they tell you you're going to be involved in this project, how many questions do they tell you they're going to need?
The game has, I want to say, 1,300.
1,300. Oh, jeez.
So
I got asked once to do trivia questions for a bar trivia night once, and I think I had to do 10 questions, and it took me forever to write the questions. I can't imagine 1,300.
It is incredible. Like the sheer breadth of editing and proofing, and it's not just proofing, like making sure that it's grammatically correct. You have to actually verify the truth behind every one of those questions, you know? So you remembered where you have to kind of remember where you got it from and whether it's accurate or not. We had a couple different writers. It wasn't just me. It was a couple of them people on it. And so every time they would submit their work, I'd have to proof every single question. And some of them got kind of tricky because I didn't know where they got it from.
Hmm.
So yeah, it was a tough, tough experience, but it was fun. Very fun.
Boy. And then you have to separate between the show and the book and make sure you're not looking at the wrong source.
Yep.
Wow. Oy vey. Very nice.
Yeah, very nice.
Now, is it only available on your site, or do you guys sell in store anywhere?
Oh yeah, we'll sell in stores. I don't know what stores will have it, but it'll be all a lot of different stores for sure. At least in local game stores. I'm thinking it might be in bigger stores as well. I'm not sure. I don't know the details on that.
All right, I guess we can move on to some season 5 discussion. I think I will move this to the end of the episode just in case people want to listen to the book stuff first and decide if they want to listen to the TV show. So anyways, let's go into the chapter here, Arya 5. I don't know if you had time to prepare a recap, Kyle.
Nope, it's all you, Amin.
Okay. So in Arya 5, she goes to Stony Sept with the Brotherhood Without Banners men, and they come across the crow cages, and there's a bit of a dispute there about that kind of justice versus hanging someone. So they end up giving them mercy by killing them. They're at the brothel. We get a little bit of backstory about the Battle of the Bells there. Gendry meets his sister there. Hopefully nothing happens between them. And then we find the Huntsman's returned with the Hound, not Jaime Lannister. So that's the overall review. We're just going to go through it piece by piece, starting with the whole Battle of the Bells, which I think maybe for you, Jason, in particular, given that you're interested in battles and military and that kind of stuff in terms of board game perspective, you might have found interesting.
Yes, I did. I like that. That's great.
It's also interesting because we later on find from John Connington himself his point of view on the battle and what he learned from it.
Oh, you're right. I forgot about that. What chapter was that?
I think that's in Dance of Dragons, right? Because we get to see his point of view in Dance of Dragons.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he says...
Was it the one when he's storming Griffin's Roost?
It might be around then. Yeah, I'm not sure which chapter it is, but I remember because he says, "Oh, I was so close to that battle. If only I had fought Robert, I could have won." Like, it's funny because here the I think, or whoever is saying the story, Harwin is saying, "Oh, if Robert had fought him, Robert would have won." But he's like, "Oh, if only if I'd done that," and he's like, "I did everything possible," and we still. And then the other guy, I think in the mercenary group, says, "Well, no, you should have just burned the city. That's what Tywin would have done. Burned the city and then killed everyone, including Robert, within it."
Jeez. Yeah, I remember when I read this the first time, like so many other recaps of battles, I just kind of like brushed it off. And I'm like, oh, I don't really need to know about that one too much. And then I remember reading Dance and like Connington becomes a major figure and he talks about the Battle of Bales. I'm like, oh, crap. We learned about that before. And so I'm glad I'm rereading this chapter with you guys because I was like, oh, yes, I've wanted to reread this since I read Dance and sort of get the perspective on it from someone other than Connington. It's what battle was Robert hurt from that he was hiding out?
Was it Ashford?
Yeah, he lost to basically Randall Tarly. I mean, it was Mace Tyrell's army, but Randall Tarly's van. So he lost and he retreated north to this point like scattered forces, if any. It was basically just him.
Yeah, I was going to say, because he didn't seem to have any forces opposing Connington when he showed up.
Yeah. So he was on the run. He came here. He was being followed by Connington and then Ned. And
was Connington at Ashford as well? Or was he coming in from another...
No, he was coming from King's Landing.
Yeah, he's coming from a different angle. Yeah. He had just been made hand, I believe, at that time. So.
Well, because, yeah, he burned the other guy or something, didn't he?
Because Connington was Rhaegar's friend, and so Rhaegar wasn't available, and the Mad King was like, okay, we'll try Connington. Put him in his hand, and he came in and wounded the Tully, Lord Tully, killed Ser Dennis Arryn, probably who would have been another one of Jon's heirs that dies, because it's basically all his heirs keep dying, cousins or whatever, or nephews. Yeah.
Yeah, so is Dennis?
No, it's Arryn. So this is from Jon's area.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. But I'm bet on you. Like I have no evidence for it, but he probably was in line to be Jon's heir and died.
That was a new mistake. I apologize. Yeah.
Sorry.
I will back away for a second.
So, but just it is interesting because later when John Connington says he's learned that lesson, he actually basically agrees that I don't know if that would have settled things. I don't know if Ed and Lord Tully would have just been like, oh, you just burned our friend. We're gonna give up. I mean, it was the Starks that lost the most. But then again, he also said that Tywin would have then also offered pardons at that point. Like he would have negotiated. Anyways, that is an interesting battle the way it was.
So wait, Robert is just sleeping with all these women while he's there getting healed?
Yeah, while he's recovering.
Oh my God.
And then he gets someone pregnant, which is his daughter here.
It's not how you heal your wounds, you know?
That's probably how Rob did. That's how Rob did it, though. So I mean,
oh, that's true. Yeah. Rob was just one person. Robert like slept. She said, and all the other women in the brothel.
Oh my gosh!
And then while he's fighting the war to get back his beloved, so
what a guy.
Yeah. So, anyways, in present times, we hear about the Huntsman, which kind of seems like a DC Comics character, anti-hero type person, because his wife and sister were raped and potentially killed, and his sheep's flock was killed, his dogs were all killed, and now he's gone like rogue. Now he has a whole pack of dogs.
Yeah, we don't actually get his name, do we?
I want to look that up to see who he is. It's very George to have these different like nicknames, like the Huntsman.
Well, when I was reading it again, I was kind of hung up on this. So what this town was like? What is this? What is the Stony Sept? Like, is it? Who are they loyal to, and is there like a house that resides over them, or I don't know. I guess it's more a question of all like of how the geopolitics of the area works. I'm a little confused.
Yeah, it's an interesting area. I mean, I guess it's technically Riverlands still.
it's Riverlands, but the people there don't seem to support. Well, okay, so there's this knight, Sir Wilbert, right?
Yeah.
Who died, and he was like in charge of the town. So I guess that means that it was his part of his land, like he owned. I don't know how that works, but like, do landed knights have towns associated with them, or?
It's pretty big for landed knights, yeah. Did you see anything in the World of Ice and Fire? Do you have that beside you? It probably has an entry.
I looked, actually, and I did not find anything regarding that. So,
but if it's just the Stony Sept, it's just like a religious, like a just a town that kind of built up around a church, or
yeah, it seems to be the middle of it is the Sept. So maybe that was there first, and then other people showed up because there's also like a little keep there. Anyways, we get to the guys in the crow cages, which they've been put in there as punishment for raping and killing. And but the Brotherhood saying like, no, you should hang them. That's the just thing to do is hang them, not to like torture them to death, basically.
Which is so nice, right? Starks, wolves. Yes.
And then again, like if they're Tully Bannermen or if they're Tully,
I think they're Karstarks, is my guess, right? When they're looking for Lannister. And they didn't find him, and they did that. Let's see.
Oh, they do say that. So Karstarks would be a.
It's probably them. I'm trying to see like what happened then.
What were you saying, Jason?
I'm still trying to figure out who these people are. Like, who are the villagers in the Stony Sept? Like, and if they're part of the Riverlands, that means they're on the same side as the Starks. They should be supporting the Starks, not hanging them.
Yeah, but these particular guys committed crimes. And that's kind of show. I mean, the books also show that. It's like not all of Rob's men are good. There's some of them, not even the Karstarks ones that have deserted. There's other ones that are just bad. Like the guys in the cages had been raping and killing people.
Yeah, you're right. Never mind. I forgot. Yeah.
But still, the Brotherhood says you should hang them. You shouldn't torture people to death. So there's still like, the Brotherhood is still like good at this point. They're still trying to be balanced. What they do, they still have trials, they still do that kind of stuff, and so they give him mercy, they shoot them. But I'm trying to see where I thought these were Karstarks in particular.
Yeah, and the fountain has the trout in it, which makes me think there it's a Tully.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tully town, yeah. I noticed that too.
But I think things have sort of, they're almost not quite rogue in a way, but it seems like the Huntsman now that he's in charge, they're sort of just on their own. They're fending for themselves and don't really care about anybody else too much, it seems.
Just trying to stay secure.
Yeah, and they're happy when the Brotherhood Without Banners comes back.
Yeah, the whores don't even charge.
That faction also doesn't like, the Brotherhood also just kind of fights themselves, so it kind of makes sense that town would be an allegiance to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here it says, those they specifically wanted Kingslayer, the guys in the cage. They didn't find him, and then they went to this. All right. So then they're killed off there, and then they, as I said, Lord Beric, Lem specifically said, oh, by the way, I think I've talked to you, Kyle, about this, but you might not have heard this theory, Jason, the idea that Lem Lemoncloak might have been Rhaegar's squire.
Yeah, briefly. I don't know much details.
Yeah, like it's kind of built up throughout the books, but there is a point or two in this chapter that might be relevant. Like when the idea is that maybe like Rhaegar promised him to be on the Kingsguard at some point, like was going to do it, even maybe gave him a white cloak, and then that's why he keeps the cloak that is yellow now. It was originally white, and then one of the women here says, "Oh, why didn't you wash your cloak? You're afraid like it'll wash out, and we'll see you really a knight of the Kingsguard."
I think there's a joke, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, it's a joke. But I mean, it could also be a line put in by Martin as a clue.
Could be a ribbing. Oh. Your friends know he wanted to be one. And
my suspicion is that she wouldn't have actually known. Like, yeah, it's possible she knows she's joking. I think she just it's irony. Like, she says that, but actually it's true. Like, he was promised to be, or he expected to be.
The only other, like, yellow cloaks that we know are the city guard, the city watch, the gold cloaks.
Yeah.
So it might have been easy to get a hold of one of theirs as well. That's what I thought. And I didn't really think it meant anything. I just thought, oh, he happened to beat up one of these guys and take their cloaks at one point or something.
Yeah. You know, there's a few lines throughout the books. You put them all together, there's a theory. I mean, it's not, you know, it's still a theory, but it's not like completely crackpot. So it's worth looking for these kind of points. And it would be interesting if he was. So, But Lem himself turns dark later. I mean, he wears the hound helmet and he's like all about revenge now. So I think the later Lem might not be caring if people are put in crow cages.
Yeah.
So. Which, and these crow cages are also in Dunk and Egg's time. If you, I don't know if you've read the Hedge Knight stories, but they come across them as well. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a disturbing torture, that's for sure. Speaking of Dunk and Egg, they go, they visit the Stony Sept at one point in one of their novellas.
Oh, do they?
And it's prior to the second Blackfyre Rebellion. While they're in town, they saw the head of a Septon executed for speaking treason about Lord Bloodraven.
Mm.
So, I think they're just passing through. Or
did you get? By the way, in the Mystery Night, Jason, did you get that Bloodraven was actually there in disguise?
Was where
he was? He was in the
exactly.
Yeah. Where is it? He was actually one of those knights, like within the like the tournament, within the place. There was a guy that like.
Oh no, I didn't get that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, it's him. The hints are there. Like, even Dunk looks at him in times, and his face kind of seems to be changing and look like somebody else. And then he basically talks all the stuff about Bloodraven and says all these things. You're like, why the hell would this knight know all these details about, like, Bloodraven's politics and stuff? And it's basically him in disguise there, like, their glamour.
I've only read that once. I should probably read it again.
Oh, it's definitely worth rereading. I mean, in fact, the first time I read it, I didn't like it that much. We didn't do a podcast on it for a few years, but we finally
did. I
didn't
like it either.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, well, reread it, and then we'll send you our episode to listen. So I think that's a good one.
Yeah.
Kyle's learned a lot since then as well. So
I'm always learning.
Yeah. Turn on your gaydar, because there's a guy flirting with Duncan there, but Kyle didn't pick it up.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so then there's Tansy here, which is interesting. There's a girl named Tansy running the brothel. Well, I guess that makes sense that her name would be Tansy, because she probably has a lot of Tansy tea.
Hmm.
Arya picks it up because she's learned from Sirio to look and see what was actually there. This is a brothel. And Tom is always singing all these different songs about maids. That seems to be his main thing. Bella comes in and starts flirting with Gendry, but he'll have none of it. He says, no, I'm not interested.
Thankfully.
In your services. Yeah. I mean, good that he doesn't do it for that purpose, but also I guess he just doesn't want to, just likes to polish his helmet, so Arya says.
That's such a terrible, terrible pun. Yeah, so does anything important happen in the brothel? Everybody's just having fun. Are there any faces in here? Like any of these girls that we see again or anything? Or is it just face value?
Catch anything there. The only part that was interesting is when they were talking about how Jaime escaped and somebody's like, oh, so, Lady Catelyn spent the night with him.
Oh, yeah. They believe she fell in love with him.
Yeah.
And let him go.
And with the other, with Brienne as well, apparently. Just those kind of like crazy rumors is funny to hear when you know they're not true.
I wonder if we'll get those rumors again. I mean, if anyone ever recognized Stoneheart or whatnot, I wonder if they'll.
Mm. Most people that see her die. So they are not part of the group, but you never know.
Yeah, I guess they'd be more concerned with her being risen from the dead than having loved a Lannister. Interesting.
All right, well then Arya gets creeped on by this really creepy old dude, and Gendry steps in to help out. But then he's like mad at her, and so he's like, oh, I'll go ring her bell, but I don't think he's going to do that. So, and then Arya's saying her different lines about people she wants killed, and somebody shows up, and then, oh, wow, it's the Hound. The Hound's been captured by the Mad Huntsman.
We don't know that yet, right?
No.
No. Yeah, it doesn't actually expressly say in this chapter.
Yeah.
It just says when he saw his face, and it's not the Kingslayer. But, I mean, the hints are there. Like, even if we didn't know in retrospect, we got that Lannister gold that you have because the Hound had a big bag of gold when he was leaving.
I think he was a big person or something they mentioned.
Mm.
Yeah, and they throw in she didn't recognize him until he turned his head. Just kind of.
Yeah.
Which seems like it could be a hint or could not. But.
The Hound captured by a bunch of dogs. So he's got 100 dogs. That's crazy. What happened to this guy? Like, is he still around? The Huntsman?
Did you look him up?
Yeah, I'm trying to see. He got the gold and he went to buy some grain with it. That's it. That's the last we've heard of him.
Hmm. Has anything happened to Stony Sept since once we leave here?
I don't think so. No, it doesn't look like it.
So he's probably still just running the town, right?
I don't even know if he seems to be based out of this area, but he probably moves around and stuff. Like, I don't know if he's formally running it, but yeah. So I would think he's got 50 dogs protecting him, so should be good. Oh, and Arya actually has a wolf dream. She dreams, and I guess she's like warring with Nymeria because she can see Nymeria running around with a pack.
And she's had the dream. This isn't the first time she's had it, right?
No, she had it and she will have it again.
Okay, because she's got the, because she's talking about how she's not alone. She's with brothers and sisters, and so there's the hints of the pack that gets mentioned.
Yeah, they take out a horse here. Okay, just looking at the list here, I think we've pretty much covered everything we wanted to talk about, except if there's anything in particular, Jason, you had in regards to the World of Ice and Fire or Lands of Ice and Fire you want to talk about, or just in general, you seem to have really enjoyed those works, right?
I really did. My office cubicle walls, I took all the maps from the Lands of Ice and Fire and spread them out. So it's nice. I don't know if you play around with that much, the Lands of Ice and Fire maps.
I don't actually have it. I actually bought it though, so she kind of showed us what's involved, and it's pretty intense, the maps.
Yeah, there's a map of Westeros. There's a couple of maps of Westeros. There's one map of Westeros, and there's one map of the Free Cities area, and there's a map of... There's like, basically, it splits the Essos continent into about three different maps.
Hmm.
But I wanted one giant map of Essos, so I can combine it with the map of Westeros and just create, from east to west, the entirety of the entire world. So I cut off the little edges, and I combined them together to make one full spread. So it's about 5 feet of poster. But the weird thing about it is like the Westeros map is like 5% smaller, like 10% smaller than the rest of the maps. So it's just like this weird scaling where it was just off by the smallest hair. I'm always wondering, why did they do that? Why didn't they just make it the perfect scale? I mean, they must have known people were going to do what I was doing.
Yeah. That's a strange choice.
Yeah, but they're pretty cool. When you're looking at it in total, too, you look at all the maps together, and you can see how empty Essos really is compared to Westeros.
Hmm.
Like, you look at the map of Westeros, and it's just covered in dots of towns and castles and holdings and named locations. And then Essos is just like... It's 9 free cities, and that's about it. And a couple flavor cities, and
a bunch of Dothraki running around.
Yeah,
Well, I mean, part of that is like stretches of Dothraki territory and grasslands and that stuff. But you'd think maybe part of it is just he hasn't bothered to fill in the little towns that are in those areas on the map.
Do you think there are towns up there and stuff? Do you think that is a populated area? He mentions how some of it is ruins. Like, for example, the Rhoyne River. You know. Most of that we've seen, and it's just nothing but ruins, basically.
I would think there were like villages and things around, but I don't know if I'd say towns.
Yeah, I think there's small. I mean, there's things he just hasn't bothered to fill them out. There's probably nothing that rivals the free cities in size, but there's got to be a place that he just hasn't bothered to fill out.
Yeah. If you go a lot further east, I'm actually really fascinated by what's over there. Where it actually starts to become more populated and more interesting, where there actually is stuff. We don't know a lot about it, but there's a lot, especially on the maps in this particular set, there's a lot of stuff mentioned on the maps that you're like, what is that? I have no idea what that is.
Do the maps show like the 5 forts of like or something? Or how many forts is
it? It goes all the way out there.
Yeah. Oh, it's on the map. Really? Oh, wow.
Yep.
That was before the World of Ice and Fire came out to really explain what they were. So you're like, what are these? Things up there.
Ooh.
A lot of stuff. Everything from like Yeti and Lang and there's some weird stuff. Like there's this one area on the top of the map. I don't think World's Vice and Fire talks about this, but there's this one area called, I think it's called like Muscovy or something.
Hmm.
Which is the old term for what Russia used to be.
Yeah.
Russia used to be called Muscovy, basically. So I don't know what that's all about. There's a bunch of islands. They're called the Thousand Islands.
Oh, wow.
Are those in the west or are they in the east?
The east. They're northeast.
Just. Yeah, the only thing that's missing, I mean, and it's intentional, is to see, like, where does it lead, like, where does it go around to get back to Westeros? Like, what's the gap there? And it's possible Euron has been traveling between that gap area.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Or it's, gap. It's a flat.
That's what it's called.
Flat room.
Truther. I like it. Yeah. Interesting.
Cool. Well, thanks for joining us, Jason. It's been great.
Yep. I always enjoy it.
Do you have a Twitter or something you use, or just like the company website you want to promote? Or
FantasyFlightGames.com.
Okay.
You can always check out. We always have a bunch of Game of Thrones games coming out, so there's other ones coming, I'm sure, that you want to pay attention to as well, that I can't really talk about, but there's a lot of Game of Thrones constantly coming out. We just came out with the second edition for the card game. Game of Thrones card game.
Yeah.
Completely redid that one, and I don't know if you had a chance to play that yet.
No, but it seemed like it was a good idea, like, because the first one had so many, like, a massive book for frequently asked questions, so I think at that point it made sense
for
the second edition.
It's clean, it's beautiful, we include more factions in this one. You can play as the Night's Watch in this version, which is pretty cool. If you like card games, it's a pretty good one.
Nice.
Cool. So for our listeners out there, what I'm going to do is actually move the season 5 and, I guess, season 6 chat to the after show. For the people who want to listen, it'll just be the after show of this episode. But otherwise, thanks for joining us. Check us out on podcastoficeandfire.com, on Facebook, and on Twitter, and on DeviantArt. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
You've been to the facilities, right?
Yeah.
Or at least the game center, right?
Yeah. The game center, yeah.
The new one?
I don't know if I went to the new one. Like, was it? I think it might have been built since I left, maybe.
Yeah, because the one I saw you at Days of Ice and Fire, did you go to any one after that?
No.
Okay, yeah. So that's an old facility. We moved to a new one about a mile away, and we made a new game center, which is fantastic. Just it's amazing.
Where are you guys based out of? Where is all this?
Roseville, Minnesota.
Minnesota?
Roseville. It's a northern suburb of Minneapolis.
Which is right by where F.D. Ward lives, Kyle. So,
oh, okay.
He's been there a couple times. Because I went to Days of Ice and Fire 2013. There was a 2014, which I didn't make because it was at the same time as the Ice and Fire convention. But I don't think there's been one since then, right?
Maybe you're right. I don't think there has been.
Hopefully they will bring it so I can come back.
Yeah, I would love to have that.
They need to have it and have a Feast for Crows, the championship. Like, that needs to be what's used. Oh, well, we can only hope.
Jason, I have a random question for you.
Yep.
When my roommate asked me, because he heard I was talking to you, he's been heavily involved in the board game community and designing and stuff, and he wanted to know, how do you guys hire? Are there job opportunities that come up? Do you guys post any listings or anything?
Yes, we do. If you go to our website, fantasyflightgames.com, at the very bottom there's a tab, in the little fine print area where it says careers, and you can click on it, and there's career opportunities. We also have internships, which is actually, if you want insider advice, we hire a lot of our interns. So if you know anyone who wants to get in as a design, especially from the design and the creative standpoint,
yes.
If you know anyone that wants to get in the door that way, internships are a great way to do it.
There you go. And you guys only do it out of Minnesota. You don't have any branches.
No.
Anywhere else?
No.
Okay. Very cool. Thank you for that inside info.
Yep.
Okay, I guess that's all. I don't think I have any more questions, but as said, you're always welcome to come back in the future, and maybe after season 6.
We'll have to have you on for...
a season 6 episode, potentially.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll need people, because it's only just going to be me and Kyle doing it plus guests, so for the TV show.
You review every after every episode?
Yeah, we usually do it a day or two after.
The latest ones to get out. So a somber second reflection.
We're there right before you watch next week's.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the last week.
Yeah, you guys are the previously on.
Yeah,
exactly.
He's listening to us right before the episode comes out. Yeah.
I'd love to do that because we religiously watch it. So I'll certainly be involved.
Cool.
Wonderful.
And the other thing, just for your information, is that we did go to Comic-Con last year, which is pretty cool. We did a panel at Comic-Con.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
The San Diego one?
Yeah, San Diego. It was just kind of like a fan panel for it because they always have the Game of Thrones official one, but they do take some fan panels. So I contacted them and said, hey, we can do one based out of the books, but also talking about the shows. And so we did. And it was fun, right, Kyle?
Yeah, it went really well. We had a good turnout. And everyone seemed to enjoy it. Yeah, it was a good one.
Did you get to like interact with the HBO people or the show or anything? Or
no, we interacted with the fans, which is better, I think. So
yeah.
Although Kyle did go to the Game of Thrones experience, I think after waiting 4 hours or something.
Yeah, I did. I did wait for that. Yeah, I got a shirt. All I got was this lousy shirt. No.
Did you go to the live panel?
Unfortunately not, because have you ever been to San Diego Comic-Con?
No, I haven't.
It's in Hall H, which is you have to sleep out overnight in order to get in. So,
jeez.
Which, Carl, you did that 1 year, I think, but I think it's...
I've done it once, but I'm not getting any younger, and sleeping on the ground isn't...
But I did see people from FFG there, though. I think they were there for some of the other games. Like, I saw them in the main center. There was an FFG table.
Yeah, we're in all the conferences now, or all the conventions now, so we're everywhere.
Do you go to Gen Con, Jason?
Well, huge. We have a huge Gen Con presence. That's the biggest one.
But you personally?
Yes, I have. I have gone. I've been at FFG for 6 years, and I've been for four. I think I've been to four Gen Cons.
Very nice.
With FFG.
Do you guys have your world championships there, or you have your own? You have your own, I think, right?
We have our own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you just need to slot the board game in there.
The World Championship of the board game? Ah,
yeah, just slot it right, because it's already there. All you need is a couple people to moderate it, and there you go. It's like people would come to it, and I'll be there. I'll show up.
Do it.
The weird thing about those World Championships, though, is they're all the really hardcore tournament players. They don't really get into to board games. They do minis games and card games, but they don't even know what board games are. So it's
game, like especially the card game, they're playing one on ones. I would take it for the most part, right?
Yeah,
it's one versus one. You can't control that in a board game. It's different when you play with five or six people. If you're really professional, really focused on winning, you prefer when it's just you. That's why you don't play chess with like five people at the same time. So that's what they like. But there is a certain level to play in the board game. You can be like really good at it and still lose, but you can at least try to increase your odds of winning.
Yeah, you're right.
Cool. So yeah, maybe next year. I mean, I know it's not in your power. I'm just saying we can hope that you'll get there. Okay, I'm gonna say goodbye and hopefully record it properly. Kyle, let me know. All right. Go.
Jason, thank you so much. Yeah, it was a pleasure. So
yep. Yeah, that was fun.
Have a good night.
Have a good night.
Cheers. Take care.
You were talked about Hard Home, so you really liked that episode, it seems.
Yeah, that was just... there's only a handful of episodes of the show that I can say, like, I honestly say I liked better than the book. And that was definitely one of them.
And the show does battle episodes particularly well. Like, that seems to
they
be
do,
one of their strengths there.
It's getting better. I mean, you know, every time they show one, it's just, wow.
So what were some of the highlights from that episode in particular that you like?
It was just the atmosphere. It was so, like, there was so much dread. Like, I didn't quite know what was going to happen, because in the books, you know, they go there and something probably happened, but we don't quite know the details of it yet.
Probably not, so, not as epic.
Yeah.
They had less guys there, and John's not there, so.
And John's not there, yeah. I mean, it could have been something similar. I don't know. But yeah, it, and so when they're negotiating with the wildlings, and you're almost focused so intently on that negotiation because it's getting kind of hot and heated, and it's really tense. And all of a sudden, I think that if I remember correctly, there's like a horn that blows or something, and they go outside and they see the mist coming in or the fog coming in, and it was like scary, you know. Like, I've never seen Game of Thrones actually be like frightening.
Yeah,
just thinking about it. Yeah, that was a wonderful episode. And just like you said, like, we know something happened up there in the books, and they talk about it a bit, but we never actually saw firsthand what it is. And taking something like that and turning it into this epic battle thing was, I think, a very cool thing that the show did. Very enjoyable.
I was saying, with the whole Night's King thing, like, when he first appeared with the whole baby stuff, like, I was kind of skeptical. I was like, this is kind of dumb.
Yeah.
But the way they treated him in this episode kind of gave him a character. It gave him this really threatening, imposing, like, counter to Jon Snow. Like, oh, it was just great. It was just the way he stared him down as he sailed away. Like,
he went from being an angry babysitter to a badass. So,
yeah.
So I guess I've asked this question before, but Jason, I want to ask you. Do you believe that this Night's Watch, that this particular character is in the books, or are they just sort of using him to have like kind of a figurehead for the evil others in the show? Do you think a character like him will pop up in the books?
Well, I don't think so. I think this is totally this is a creation of the show. Because there's the fact that they use the term Night's King. I mean, that is a character from the books, from the mythos.
Yes.
But it's not. I mean, he's nowhere near relevant in the current setting. So I don't know. I just don't think. I think they just kind of saw the name and they're like, yeah, let's make it that guy. And they just kind of ran with it.
Well, high five. I'm right there with you.
And there's two points to that. I mean, is it the actual Night's King from way back when, or is it just a Night's King? Is that like a title? Because it could just be some guy who's like the current Night King. But if it's the actual guy from way back when, I think that's pretty deep. Like, it has a big effect.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
He did seem to have that kind of connection with John, though, when he was looking at him. Because the actual guy from way back when was probably a Stark.
Would we know that?
The come at me, bro scene?
Yeah. Well, we don't know it for sure, but that's what old Dan speculates, that she said. It could. Some say it was a Bolton, some say it was like Gnar or whatever, but like it was actually a Stark.
Oh, okay. I forgot about that.
But that's not canon, but I mean, that's old Nan, so she's pretty reliable.
She's been right so far, so I mean, like.
Yeah, exactly.
And we haven't seen giant spiders yet. Come on.
That's true. Or Grumpkins or whatever they're there.
They're on their way, probably.
I loved that episode when the badass wildling woman bit the dust. I was hoping she was going to.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. That was sad.
This is going to be a strong character. Oh, no, there she goes.
No, that was sad. The other interesting part was Valyrian steel taking out the other like confirmation.
Yeah, that's key, obviously. I think we all assumed that from the book, but
yeah.
The confirmation of it and I think it's, well, we actually, the show already showed Sam doing it, so.
But he had obsidian that he used, right? This is actually Valyrian steel that we haven't.
That's right. You're right. He had. Yeah.
But they had speculated the dragon steel would do it, and it, I mean, it makes sense. Like, it's Valyrian forged and it's magical. Like, you think it would work.
Yep.
So that was cool. That was definitely the highlight of the season. So let's go down to the opposite end of the season, because I know you're a big fan of books, Stannis, at least traditionally.
Yep.
So how did you take this season in that regard?
Not well. Overall, outside of the fact that this season contained the best episode, I think this was the worst season.
Yeah,
for a lot of
pretty
reasons.
Much agree with you. I think.
Stannis is a big one. Obviously, I that was just. That was terrible. I hated that. I hated all of it. It was just like, I really did like Stannis. And I liked him because I don't know if you recall, we think we talked about this last time. I liked him because he was honorable in this really not very friendly sort of way, but he was definitely honorable. And they just took the whole thing and they just dragged it to the mud because burning your own daughter is the opposite of honorable. Like, it's just so, I don't know. Yeah. It's a lot of character.
Can't really like a guy after he burns his daughter.
No. It was it was what I would almost want to call, like, it was gratuitous. Like, they didn't need to do that.
The scene itself, the way it was shot, yeah, I think it remains to be seen. I mean, we can't really judge book status till we get to this kind of point in the timeline and see what happens if it's the same scenario. Happens.
I mean, the fact that he's dead, or like probably dead, was it just a big? That's probably the first time the show ever spoiled anything for me.
Mm.
And obviously, there's going to be more now in season six. I'm going to be entirely spoiled. But that was the first time where I was like, no way. Okay, that's a big spoiler. And it kind of.
But I mean, we kind of all knew that Stannis was not going to win. So
we didn't know that. I had hope. But I had hope.
Did you think he was actually going to end up on the throne? He wasn't going to end up on the throne. Like, he might still have
No. I don't know.
So, I mean, it doesn't mean like he has to die in the books. He's just not. He's going to be dealt with in some other way. Like, he's not going to be on the throne.
He's so resilient. I liked that. I liked that resilience. I wanted to see it keep going, you know?
Mm. Yeah, he's like the Energizer Bunny. He just keeps going. By staying around is how he did so well, especially. Like, he didn't give up, and then all the other people died, and then he's like, okay.
Yeah.
If you look at the books objectively, like, he's not going to end up on the throne. He might end up in some other, like, Night's Watch commander or something if there's still a Night's Watch, but he was never going to be on the throne, I think.
Like Warden of the North or something, I guess. Yeah. It could be.
Some other position, but I mean, that something like that could still happen. They just decided to kill him, so that doesn't mean that he's dead later. But in fact, I don't really care so much that if he dies in the end, I just don't want his character, his honorable side, to die by killing his daughter. I think that's more important. If he just dies tragically in battle, whatever, at least he didn't dishonor himself.
If he doesn't kill Shireen, and he dies defeating the Boltons or taking down the Boltons, then I'm cool with that.
Or even if he gets dies against the others.
As I was gonna say, like, the others or a dragon, like Danny's dragon burns them or something. Like, okay, fine, great. I like Danny. That's cool. But not only did it just come off of the terrible act that he did, but then his actual death and the way it, he just petered out. Yeah. Like, he went from like this unstoppable ball of momentum to just everyone deserted him. He got completely destroyed in a battle, and then a woman who he had probably forgotten about came back and just beheaded him.
Yeah.
Like, hey, there is that, you know, the saying in the show, like, if you don't see that person die on screen, there's a good chance they didn't die.
But it was confirmed by the director or someone or whatever, saying, like, they're like, oh, it would be gratuitous to show him dying. So that's
they say that? Yeah. I've been a little away from all the news popping up lately.
Yeah.
So there's a series of posters that they have showing character deaths or like paying homage to characters who have died. And Stannis is one of those posters.
Damn it.
It just seems so unrealistic that he would survive to the last person and then Brienne would sweep in and to do it. It's just like, really? You just need to milk it for Brienne's benefit in this way. Not so believable.
Why did she go out there? I don't understand.
I'm trying to remember. What was she doing then?
She's
supposed to be looking for Sansa. And so she's like looking in like the tower for like the candle or whatever.
Yeah.
And then she just stops and says, nah, I want to go over here instead. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what happens in the books. But hopefully, I mean, it seems like Shireen's going to die in the books, but I'm hoping that Stannis doesn't play this role here. She might even burn or somebody else does it.
You keep saying these awful things. I mean, where are you getting this from?
She feels like she's had like bad dreams about dragons burning her or something. Like, she seems like she's a sad character, unfortunately, because like, probably has a bad faith coming to her. But
and then there was that. Did you guys predict it coming in the show?
What's that?
Shireen's death.
I didn't think it was going to happen.
It kind of did it as a trick too. It was like the episode before or something. Stannis is like, "Oh, you're my daughter," blah blah blah, and then it's like,
"No, right?
Now I'm going to kill you," just for shock value. So it's going to be, I'm not going to judge it in the books till I actually see what happens. It didn't even like, I mean, you could try in this type of situation, like, think what Martin might be going, if he actually has Stannis do it, Martin might try to bring up the situation where he can actually even get close to having a debate where it's like, to save all of humanity, can you sacrifice one person? And then you can have a debate on that. But he wasn't even doing that. It's just like, to play the Game of Thrones, I'm going to sacrifice my daughter.
Well, I think the argument was that he was trying to save his men.
Yeah, but like, his men were already leaving, and then they also got the rest of them killed later. Like, I mean, he could have really... I mean, here's the ultimate question. Like, if you're that concerned just about your men, I mean, you're a dragon.
Pop so your fire. Mandom?
You know, if you're that concerned about your men, you should burn yourself, not your daughter, because you also have king's blood. Is that what you want? You have the right to burn yourself. You don't have the right to burn somebody else. But anyways, that was the Stannis part. Is there anything else about the season you want to talk about, or it's probably...
I don't know. No, probably not.
Doesn't want to rage. Are you looking forward to the new season?
But I'm going to watch it, obviously. Watch it every single night, and yeah, I'll be all over it. But my excitement isn't as high.
Gotcha.
Strangely, because like I don't know what's coming. Like,
yeah,
it should actually be more excited, but I don't know.
Yeah. Should, but I want it in book format. That's what I want.
Yeah, I'm kind of yeah. I mean, I have people. There are people at work who are going to refuse to watch it.
Yeah,
which really? I could never do. I mean, if the information's there, I got to know.
Yeah, I keep saying, I'll say it a million times. It's like I don't think I can avoid it, and I'd much rather have the books possibly spoiled for me by a well-made show than a poorly written tweet.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, what if it's a well-written tweet versus a poorly made show?
It's a well-made show, I mean. Come on.
Yeah. No, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. The show is going downhill. It's going to go downhill in the starting of the season. I'm still going to watch it.
Almost well, you guys can... Oh, go ahead.
Please. I was going to say, almost any time that the show deviates from the book, it's not great. Especially when they take the liberties to write major storylines that are in the book, that's when it starts to become less of a great show. And so this is what's concerning about this season, is like, how much are they diverting?
I think it's going to be a fun gauge, because I think a lot of us book readers agree with you on whenever they divert from the books, it doesn't hold up too well. But now we're getting into things where we don't know if they're diverting or not. And if they're going to write these stories, and we're going to judge them solely on the merits of what they're doing in the show. And then down the line, when we read the books, we're going to be like, well, this wasn't all like it happened in the books, but I like that scene. Oh, I'm so confused. It's going to be a bit different. It's going to be interesting. But there are going to be a lot less spoilers than there were last season, because I just read that HBO is not sending any press screeners of the first four episodes to anyone.
Hmm.
Oh.
So there will be no Barristan dies spoilers
After the
first episode.
That's right. How about that? That's another one. I mean, I liked him. He was okay, but like that was not unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Did you guys read George said that he just thought of a new twist that the show can't do because it involves a character that is not alive in the show anymore?
Yes, I did hear that. And I'm kind of wondering what that means. It's good speculation. Like, what?
When I first heard it, I was like, oh, it must be Stoneheart. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, there's so many other characters like Barristan that have died in the show and are still alive in the books.
Well, I mean, they could totally still do Stoneheart. Like, she comes back from the dead. So it's not like they could just whip her out any time and be like, hey, look.
they could. That's true. But it just seems like they were against it, and it's really late for it to do so.
Yeah.
Like, they seem to have... The point of her, we talked about, it kind of shows like how you can be twisted by revenge to do unjust things.
She'll be very decomposed if they bring her back now.
She's been on ice, maybe.
I think there's, like, when you talk about the power of her lore, too, like, because John's coming back, right? We all know that.
Yeah.
So, and it's going to be through the power of R'hllor.
Yeah.
So the audiences who aren't book readers, do they know enough about this that this is possible? Because, yeah, they showed Beric and they talked about him. But do people remember that from season three or whatever it was?
Well, they'll show, like, flashbacks to that in the first episode.
Exactly. Really? And then previously on, they just have
it'll show Melisandre that. Like, oh, you can bring back the dead? I didn't know that. They'll be in there, so.
That's right. Yeah, she does meet up with them, doesn't she?
Yeah.
But I think you have quite a point. I think you have a very good point, Jason, because I've At various parties and stuff, people have asked me, because I'm always, hey, the podcast guy, what do you think? Is Jon Snow alive? It's always what I've been getting asked lately.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, no, I think he's dead, but he's coming back.
Yeah.
And they're like, huh? How does that happen? I'm like, well, do you remember this character a couple seasons ago? His name was Beric. He fought the Hound. And most of the people I talk to are like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that too.
It's like, okay.
It wasn't memorable enough to do anything with it.
Yeah.
Well, as we'll talk about in the chapter I read through, the whole Brotherhood Without Banners thing was kind of, they breezed through it too fast. So you don't remember it. In the show, you don't remember who they are.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you can't call back to them as much.
They're also corrupted faster because they sell Gendry off right away and stuff. Like, I mean, they do get corrupted in the books as well, but yeah. John coming back. I guess that's the one thing I'm looking forward to, is seeing John come back and get revenge on those people that killed him.
I think in true Martin fashion, I think him and Melisandre are just going to like leave in the night.
Somebody else will eventually take
him out or take out the Night's Watch people or something. Oh. I don't think he'll get direct revenge on them.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the way, especially in the books, is being set up with like Melisandre manipulating Ghost, that at least initially when he comes back, he's basically going to be doing her bidding in whatever way possible.
So you think he's more like, he's less sentient, kind of, or what?
He's not going to be like a white level. Like, I think protecting his personality in Ghost is going to help, but at least initially, I think she's going to either dominate him like directly, or he's just going to be inclined to follow her because she brought him back. Like, he's going to be in alignment with her.
I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah, there's a image on DeviantArt for this that I want to show you guys. It's actually pretty good. Somebody
with John as Melisandre's slave.
Whoa. No.
DeviantArt pages.
No,
are you
just,
going
just,
to?
Just John coming. Well, that's fan fiction pages. But no, this here we go. Is this the link here? Pasting the link in. Well, it's on the right side, anyways. It's the one where he's got like the burning eyes. Or did it show up in the chat?
It showed up. It just my computer's just slow, so
wants me to install Pinterest.
Well, no. Oh, you're in your phone. Oops. Yeah, that might not work.
Oh yes, I've seen this. Okay.
Never mind. That is not it. Okay, I'll send it to you later. I guess just search John Reborn on DeviantArt.
Not to jump the gun, but that Hard Home episode was the best episode of the entire series.
That was a cool one. That...
Sure, we'll get to that in a minute. I guess let's finish
off the
trivia. Actually, Kyle, do you want to do the intro?
it's all you. I mean, this is your show today.
All right, here we go.